Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
All right, folks, the call is going to begin here in a few minutes. All right, folks, call is about to begin here in just a moment. And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedy is in the Law, brought to you by Americans Restoring America. My name is Martin Michelson. I'll be your host for this evening's conference call. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you're on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't want to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone looking for legal advice has no place or business here on any of these calls. Nobody here at True Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. Just folks saying what they might do were they similarly situated to you. However, thoughtful, insightful, and educated as these opinions and these thoughts might be, however much you might take away from these calls, at the end of the day, they are still just people's opinions. Just people saying what they might do, were they similarly situated to you, and nothing more. All right, on to the next subject. We can go over a couple things here with your remedies in the law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, I take everybody to the homepage of Your Remedies in the Law, www.yourremediesinthelaw.com. We look up in the upper right-hand corner, see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it, otherwise blank page. So these two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. On the left is the jurisdictionary course. Essentially, this is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic concept of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its very high win rate, national win rate, in most traffic cases throughout the country. Of course, that's what it was popularly acquired for, but that's not why we've got it up here. The reason that it's up here is once you've gone through your jurisdictionary course and you get into the common law default process, you'll realize very quickly that it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. A lot of the key pillars that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course, you now get to essentially enact in real life. And, of course, you know, being that it is primarily used for traffic scenarios, that's what it's most popularly used for. Folks feel a little bit more comfortable with trying that for their first time, given the obvious that traffic scenarios are usually on the low end of dire importance when it comes to any type of legal scenario. So folks usually feel a little bit more comfortable and trying their hand the first time with the common law default process. And, of course, with having such a national high win rate, it makes it for a perfect real-life homework assignment. Now, both of these items are very generously set asking for a very small contribution, $250 for the jurisdictionary course and $150 for the common law default process. And so we encourage you to pick those up at your earliest convenience. All right, on to the next subject. So what were the grass fire communications, formerly known as statewide communications? And that's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every website that we have. That is 100% free. Tell your friends, tell your family about it, pass that along. Essentially, it's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. You've got a very easy-to-use setup wizard. Put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it gives you a very healthy list to choose from of different topics, ranging anything from IRS matters to credit card issues, home foreclosure, health rights, on and on and on. If you can think of it, you'll find it in that list. And then, of course, it'll ask you, to pick a radius, if you will. You know, how far away from home do you want to? Do you want that circle to extend to? And by the time it's all said and done, much how some folks would think of a social media. But of course, nothing like social media at all. It's very custom, very private. But much how folks would think of a social media, it puts you in contact with folks right there in your local area that share the same interests as you. Of course, the idea here is to put the power of communication and the power of education back in the common man. Let's suppose you jump on there and you say, well, this happened to me today. Maybe the first person comes back and says, well, I don't agree with that. I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, as thoughtful as a comment that might be, it's probably not going to help you very much in your fight. But maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I also don't think that it's fair, but I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd go down to my local county courthouse, go to the law library. Every county's got a courthouse. Every courthouse has a law library. I'd look up these terms, and then I'd watch this YouTube video. Well, now you're starting to get somewhere. Now you're actually getting something that's going to, possibly, help you and along your process. Maybe the next person comes along and says, those sound like great ideas. Also, I'd pick up this educational material over here, maybe go through this course. Now we're getting somewhere. Now we're getting down to the meat and potatoes of it. And so that's all we're trying to get folks to do here is sign up with Crossfire Communications and just start talking with one another. And as I said, of course, there's no charge for that. All right, next subject here, America's Restoring America. Of course, every time you go to your remedy, you're met with that little blue box that pops up, asks you if you want to continue on to the website you're requesting or stop for a moment, check out America's Restoring America. The reason we've done that, very simply, we're trying to get folks to explore. Your remedy has many different information providers talking about many different topics, many different educational materials. And then Your Remedy is only one of a dozen and a half websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit there for you to check out. We're hoping that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether we have an information provider that could assist you with your particular scenario, you can always give us a shout here. You can call the 1-800 number, 1-800-625-4250. Of course, you can always email me directly if you'd like. That email address is mm@yourremediesinthelaw.com. Get back to you as quickly as possible. All right, if you have not done so yet, also pick up a membership for Your Remedy is in the Law today or tomorrow, whatever your earliest convenience. Also, a very generous a proposal, just asking a very small contribution of $10 a month for that. All these calls are recorded. We've got years of just a vast wealth of information and knowledge and experience you can go back through. You've got many wonderful other tools and options there at Your Remedy that all come with that membership. Of course, if that's not an option yet for you, you have freedomsradio.com. Every one of these calls are broadcasted out every night at freedomsradio.com. So you'll never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. You don't get quite the one-on-one that you get by being a full member, but we did even put the little blue box there that you can type in your question or maybe type in a comment. And we do our best to read those out over the air. And so again, you still get that a little bit of interaction there. Again, there's no charge ever for Freedoms Radio. All right, starting to caveat emptor or your buyer beware. When you come aboard,
with an information provider here at True Remedy, you're doing just that. You're coming aboard directly with an information provider. Info providers pay for advertising at True Remedy. That expense, that would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expense that would be associated with your particular educational process or information provider's time. And so that brings us to the big question of, well, what is your refund policy at True Remedy? What is your credit or your refund policy? There is none. If there was going to be any type of a credit or a refund, that would be a strict and private matter between you and your information provider. But I can tell you even then, it's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. Again, you are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular information provider's time or educational material. All right, winding down here, I want to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conference calls are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always remain civil. Besides, if the question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it. All right, well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. I hear somebody there lurking in the background. Who is that? Is that our speaker for this evening, or is that you, Mr. Edward?
Yeah, we're going to be discussing tonight two subjects. The first is going to be really interesting. Think of it this way. Everything you always wanted to know about a signature versus an autograph, but were afraid to ask. And then after we've discussed that, we'll discuss what your conduct should be when pulled over by a highwayman or a law enforcement officer, a Leo, if you can tell the difference. So that's what we'll be covering tonight. And so we'll turn the call now over to Brother John, and let's hear what he's got to say on the matter.
Good evening, Michael, Martin. Thank you very much for that very kind and gracious introduction. We had a special request last week on signatures versus autographs. That's not a tough question to answer, but there are some things that are delicate about that especially when you're signing something that could be legally binding, it's wise to know what you're putting down there. A signature, the definition of a signature is something that you are legally bound for, or you're legally binding. What happens is that a signature, sometimes in an autograph are, both ways of marking a document. And I'm going to use that word marking, but they have two different meanings and uses. The biggest difference of a signature is a mark made on a document indicating that the person signing has agreed to the contents and is or accepting the contractual obligations therein, while an autograph may be a written or a signed message, even from a famous person. The joke about give me your John Hancock. John Hancock, usually an autograph is in script or cursive, and it sometimes is very, very fancy. But when John Hancock signed his the Declaration of Independence, you note that he did it with almost the same bravado and panache that John Wilkes Booth had when he jumped from the stage after shooting Lincoln. There are many individuals, and we had three presidents that when they signed their name, it was always the autograph, but when it came to signing a document or a treaty, they used a cursive form of an X. And that was their mark. And it was very specific. But that was not legally binding without that X. And if their name was spelled out, that wasn't their name. And that, in my own lineage, I've had one of my grandfathers and two of my great grandfathers, they were very explicit that, in the fact that I had got to know two of my great grandfathers before they passed away, but, the signatures that they had, that they had were literally a mark. And one of them looked like it looked kind of like an X, but it was a K. And it was it was a cursive K. And the other, it was a British cursive, S, as in Sierra. And, the great grandfathers, my grandfather, his son, continued on with that cursive S, but he made it a very different way. But everything that he signed was always done with that specific, attenuation of the, tail on the S. His father, my great grandfather, attenuation was on the beginning of the S. But they used a cursive S, and that was their signature, and that was, and the bankers, knew that, if Samuel's signature was not that cursive S made just that funny, that check wasn't any good. One time a gentleman had a problem. They great grandpa Samuel used some a grape to sign just I owe you $100, and he signed it and he put it on this person's back. He wrote that on the back and pay it, and it said pay to Mike. That was it. The person's back that was on it. And the banker had no problem with giving that gentleman the $100, except he wanted the check that he had written on him, you know, that it was. And much to this gentleman's chagrin, back then, the only soaps that had the capacity to get that off, because he didn't want that check floating around so it could be cashed again, was lie. He did get his $100. He regretted demanding that Grandpa Samuel give it to him in that manner. But an autograph is like like a famous person like Robert Wagner or Raquel Welch or President Gerald Ford or Ronald Reagan signed something, or maybe Ringo Starr signed an Abbey Road cover on an album. They'll usually spell it out, but if you look at Ringo Starr's signatures, you'll notice that you almost can't tell that it's actually two characters. It looks like a mauled scribble. That was his legal signature. Sometimes people scribble things in the most funny way, and you'll find out that when they scribble that on the back of a check, that's literally what makes that check worth something, or that monetary instrument or that contractual agreement, because that's their signature. And among that, when it comes to signatures, I know one person that his signature and his banker was completely aware of that. He spelled dollars when he was writing it out. He always, instead of spelling it D-O-L-L-A-R-S, he spelled it D-A-L-L-A-R-S. He always used an A instead of an O. And when you say $26,000 and no cents. He spelled it D-A-L-L, but that was part of his signature. And his bankers knew about that. And I banked at the same institution that his bank did. And one time, and this is how I found out about it, I mentioned to the gal that he had misspelled that. And the clerk, and she says, she looked at me, she goes, shh, you know. And after he left, Jessica got the manager, and they called me in their office. And he says, please understand, you know, you know you're being helpful, but that's part of his signature. And he explained that his signature was not just in what was placed on the line, but it was part. There were other parts and parcels that made that his affirmation of that document, and that that was his mark or acceptance of a firm affirmation of that document. So in this case, it was the check. Autographs, sometimes they're worth something too, you know, especially if it was like Muhammad Ali or, you know, President Lincoln or, you know, or President George Washington, those guys, all their signatures are worth something. But when it comes to selling a property, and there's, I had a problem tracing a title because I could not confirm this person's mark or their signature until I found four other documents. And this was in the Stephen F. Austin land grant, and that one of the first individuals that Stephen F. Austin had conveyed this to was a Martin Adams, that he conveyed a small piece of property to his, and Mr. Adams made a scrawl that looked like an upside down W. It was his initials, but that the tail on it, on this cursive M-A, was, there was a dot there, and it was very, very hard to prove. This judge, before he would prove, before we, he would give us the court order that to the city of Austin that this person did in fact, this was the link to trace their title to Elodium, and this particular one, the title in Elodium, had still possessed the original owner of the property with all of the rights to taxation. So an autograph can be a signature. A signature is not an autograph. They a signature is a mark accepting or affirming or applying that document or your agreement with it. So very, very important. Okay. That, that was the short topic that was requested from last week. Now, the next topic, and we're going to hold the questions until, the question and answer time period in 35 minutes. Now, the next topic. All of us like to believe that we are worth something. We have some level of self-worth, and even more so, we like to believe that that level of self-worth that we have demands some level of respect or commands some level of respect. The thing that's very important is that there's an old saying that there's three things that God cannot stand, four that he will not tolerate. But when the first enumeration of the things that he can't stand is a haughty spirit or an arrogant spirit or someone who's ascended in their own mind, an illusion in their own mind. Sometimes those of us who have position and status in life believe that others should respect that and grant us some type of respect or consideration, especially when it comes to being stopped by a traffic officer. And some of us, even when we have corrected the documentation of our actual status in the records of the government, and I prefer not to use the term correct my status, because my status has always been the same. It's the Latin word is ab initio, from the beginning. Correcting their documentation of my status, or that's the way to address that. But the fact that a local law enforcement officer is not a Leo is not legally allowed to write us a ticket. That may be fine, but it never gives us a place or position to be rude about it. There's a if we've had a hard day, that's not justification for others bending to our consideration. Even when you come home and your spouse has had a good day and you've had a bad day and you're grouching and down and getting meowchy and grouchy and, you know, and kind of barking at him or her. Okay, maybe you have a good reason why you're doing it, but is that correct? No, it is never correct. When we're interacting socially, especially with a spouse, no matter how bad our day has been, we should always have a constructive consideration for them. And in doing so, especially if there's something like a tough situation going on, like you've had a death in the family, maybe even the death was your child, you know, and some people say, we had a great marriage until we lost our child. Well, and then they got meowchy and grouchy at each other, and both of them felt that they were demanding and worthy of respect from the other, and nobody was willing to give it, but they sure wanted it. And all of a sudden, the relationship got adversarial and failed. Instead, they should have been using that moment to prove their love for each other. When you have a poor relationship with a worker, a coworker, you know, something happens and maybe they have an accident with a piece of business, the business property or whatever. Now this is your chance to apply and affirm the personal relationship that you have with that individual and prove that you're supporting them unconditionally. That will come back in big money, cash-wise, in your relationship cash, years later sometimes. Sometimes it comes back right away. Sometimes it's years later. All of this begins to apply to our attitude when we come up with a traffic stop. If we end up with a traffic stop, and maybe we've had a meowchy-grouchy kind of day, and we get resistive or unkind with the Leo, the law enforcement officer, we used to use that mostly just to refer to a local enforcement officer, but now it's just general, a law enforcement officer. What happens is that your resistiveness can be perceived to them as pensiveness with potential criminal background. That sets them on edge. Now, a bellboy, a bellman or a box boy, you know, they do a good job, and the first thing it wants that the customer, the client they're working with, wants to put some coin or some paper in their hand, you know, and thank them for a great job. Most law enforcement officers, when they're on, especially those that are on patrolling the streets, trying to keep the streets safe, a quarter or a third of the customers and clients that they have would like to ask them to suck on a .38 caliber straw and sneeze their brains out. That's very counter-motivating. They've got to be on edge. And then on top of that, regardless of how badly they feel, they're public servants. And they're forced to be kind and have a smiling, you know, oh, hi, how are you doing? Isn't it a wonderful day? And it is such a paint on. And everybody that comes up to them knows that that austere, that alter ego is painted on, and they are not really that nice. But they're demonstrating it because that's their job. Well, you get pulled over, and you're resistive about something. You don't want to give them your name. The window's rolled up kind of tight, and you don't want to talk to them. And you feel bad. You've had a rotten day. And maybe they just caught you off guard. And you may even be a diplomat. You may even have a diplomatic passport. But until they are completely aware of your status as a diplomat, and if you have diplomatic immunity, and there's a travel document that any one of you, if you have any questions, you can ask Michael, and he'll send you this syllabus on travel, and they define all the different countries that we have reciprocal agreements from, and that if you're from one of those countries, sometimes they not only have to see your diplomatic passport, but they've got to go consult this directory to find out, well, wait a minute, if it's a traffic stop, oh no, is it a capital murder? What is it? And then the procedure that is agreed to with that particular country, okay? So what happens is that are you going to get, you know, treated like with a red carpet and abject kindness right off the bat? No way. Even after you've shown them your diplomatic passport, they're still going to be sorting out on how to treat you, even if you're the president or the king of a foreign country, okay? They have to first determine your status and then figure out how to treat you, okay? Very, very important that us as American nationals understand that. And what happens is that being as friendly as possible and sociable and kind and considerate, good evening, officer, and before the car has even stopped, and many of you have heard already how I deal with a traffic stop. Before the vehicle stopped, my wallet's out, my ID is out, it's on the dash. When I come to a stop, the windows are all open. Before I come to a stop, I turn on the interior after I've got my wallet on the dash. But as I'm coming to a stop and rolling the windows down, all of them, as many that will, especially if they're electronic, if they're manual, just the one I can get to, and I don't make bizarre movements opening up the passenger one, after I've turned on the interior light. But when the interior light comes on and I'm still rolling to a stop, they see that I'm not moving, I'm not doing anything. I don't do anything to alarm them or disturb them or bruise or disbruise them. We come to a stop. I turn the ignition off. I turn the headlights off, but I leave the parking lights on, which leaves the dash lights on also. And I make sure the interior light's on. I put the keys up in the dash far enough to the front that they realize that they're beyond reach so that they don't believe I'm going to reach out, grab one of their hands, and start the car and proceed down the road, then drag them along until I let them go underneath their rear wheel. I personally had friends that were Leos that were murdered that way. And these guys regularly watch out for that. But when they ask for my documentation, my insurance paperwork, I try to have that in a place that's already so easy to get to that it's on the dash waiting before I come to a stop. You know, and so when the window rolls down, my hands are abjectly at 10 and 2. My feet are not on the brake. When your feet are on the brake, usually they're in their minds, the only thing they can think of is that the car is running and it's in gear because they're using the brake to keep it from moving. But if the brake lights are not on in their mind and there's no headlights on, chances are the car is in neutral or park or the engine's even shut off. You just backed their tension level down from DEFCON 1 to DEFCON 2 or even DEFCON 3. We're not at peacetime yet. We're not at DEFCON 5, but you've already set the table for putting them at ease. They, remember, they're public servants. They work for us. They're not, this is not a game where there's two teams on the field and they're the opposing team. Get that out of their mind. There are sometimes there are bad people that work at the Save-On drugstore. That doesn't mean that all the Save-On drugstore employees are bad. The Denny's restaurant, there's great waiters and waitresses there, and then there's some that are just bunk, you know. And it's true that there are some people that have an ego of four-lane freeway wide that can't wait to exercise what, you know, find a way to exercise their ego and a little bit of authority if they get some. And some of them actually sign up to wear a badge just so that they can brandish authority and sometimes a weapon and feel like they're worth something. And that's something that gives them some self-satisfaction that they have reached some level of accomplishment the day when they've lorded over somebody by drawing their firearm, you know, or just embarking at them, you know, with them pulled over. But if you have the most tender one, considerate smile on your face and yes, good evening, officer, how you doing tonight? And they may say, well, let me ask the questions. Thank you. And just thank them. And, they'll say, can I see your, you know, your license and your insurance? They used to ask for registration. They don't do that anymore. What they do, they, most of the, patrol cars and traffic vehicles have cameras in them and, or they have portable data terminals, PDTs, and they'll either type in your license plate number or the camera will do a recognition. They'll pull it up. They'll get the RO and they'll pull up the picture of the RO, registered owner. And if you look like the picture that they just saw before they got out of their patrol vehicle, they're already good with that. They don't need that. Excuse me, I just got a little something to drink there. The next thing they're going to do, they're going to tell you why they stopped you. Sir, do you know why I stopped you? Don't say something like, how could I know? And there's a really bad joke about this guy who gets pulled over. He's resistive to rolling down the window and, sir, roll down your window. Why should I do that? And he finally rolls it down and says, sir, do you know why I stopped you? Of course I don't. What do you think I have? ESP or something? You know, shouldn't you be out, protecting and serving against some dangerous criminals or something? You know, and he says, sir, could I see your license and your insurance? Why do you possibly need those? And the guy looks over at his wife and says, you know, and he asks his wife, is he always this unkind and resistive? And she goes, no, only when he's been drinking heavily. And, but they're looking for, if they are getting annoyed and upset, some of them take it personally. They'll start looking for a way to detain you or to make it clear to you that they're the boss and you're not. And to that end, some people say, well, they're looking for a way to probable cause to search the vehicle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there are some that are already bad individuals that they're not the shining example of chivalry and champagne that an officer should be. And to them, they're looking just to trip. There are a few of those bad ones out there looking to trip you up. And to that end, we have some students right now that they did trip up. They the individual got resistive, and well, you know, I don't need to show you that. Well, actually, they do need to show your ID, and they need to be able to identify who you are. I'm going to pause for a moment to get a sip here. Thank you. And although it's a statute law, part of breaking the ice and being diplomatic is being pleasantly compliant with any request that they have. If we're not pleasantly compliant, things escalate very quickly, and people have a nasty habit of when their counterparts appear to be pensive, that they become pensive as well. Leos are not immune from that either. And for those of you who would like a little YouTube on kindness and a traffic stop, what I encourage you to do is ask Michael tonight, or send Michael a text or an email, and he will send you a short link to a YouTube about an individual who was stopped, and it started out very inert, and it was a body cam from one of the officers that stopped him. And what happens is that the deputy was being very kind, and he says, could I see your ID? And he goes, no. So you're not. He said, no. And he says, so you're not going to give me your ID? And he started to become resistive, and all of a sudden you see the shadows of up to five other officers, or the images, or the actual likenesses in the camera pan as he's moving around. The person with the body cam had it showing up around there, and this gentleman did have a gun in the car, and he was probably pensive and unaware. Instead of keeping his hands on the steering wheel and at 10 and 2 and saying, and giving him the a copy of his ID, or maybe he didn't have it. He says, officer, my ID is underneath the seat. I don't know where it's at, or it's in the trunk, or today I left the house and I didn't realize that I forgot my wallet. I don't have my ID on me. My name is such and such. I remember my driver's license number. And, now a lot of times if you say that, they already looked up, and if you're the registered owner of the vehicle, they already looked it up, and they looked up where the address was and all the, licensed individuals that live at that address or domicile there, and they'll already have an idea of what you look like, and because they will have showed up on their screen. And to that end, one of them will say, well, you need to carry it with you. Do you have your insurance? I think it's in the dash box. I'm going to take my right hand off the steering wheel, and I'm going to reach in the dash box. Oh, wait a minute. Deputy, could you come around? I'm going to press the unlock button. Could you reach in, or I'm going to roll down the passenger window. Could you reach in and get my insurance out of the dash box? Because there's also a gun in there, okay? And I'm going to keep my hands on the steering wheel, and you just tell them that. tell them that there is a gun in there, and could you have your partner just reach in and grab it? I don't want to do anything that would necessarily alarm you. Or if they say, well, I want your wallet, could I step out of the vehicle because my wallet is on the floor, it's underneath the seat, and there's also a gun underneath the seat. And could I step out and I'll let you reach in and grab my wallet. and one of their deputies will hold a gun to your head. He'll point it at you, you know, the moment you say that. And they'll say, okay, step out. And when they say, you know, and the first thing when you step out, whether they ask you or not, if you put your hands on your head and you take 1 to 2 steps away from the car, then they'll tell you where to go. And I don't mean 2 HE double toothpicks, but they'll direct you how they want to. And I've actually been in a passenger in a car when somebody did this, and in the three of us that were in the back of the back seat of this, and of all things, it was a four-door 74 Dodge Coronet that I used to loan to L.A. sheriffs as a chase car, and the three of us were in the back seat, and eventually they figured out who we were. And that we had just picked up the vehicle. It was a plain blue wrapper chase car that was a genuine 236 mile an hour car, and that we used to loan out to LA Sheriff and California Highway Patrol in Southern California back in the mid late 70s. And I had a few friends in law enforcement, but at this particular one, the gentleman who was driving was an off-duty Downey police officer, and he had his carry sitting on the floor next to the wallet on the front there. And when the California Highway Patrol stopped us, they didn't know that we had just picked up the car from the sheriff, and we didn't have all this other stuff. And poor Jeff Tusing, I shouldn't use his name. He's only 5'7" and a half. These guys just about beat him up when they finally got his wallet and they realized he was DPD. And it was like, holy shaving cream, Batman. But had Jeff not acted that way, he could have been the victim of a misperception. And remember, you can be right. You can be dead right. I would like all of you tonight, after this call is over, to email or text Michael, and he will send you the link to a YouTube that was very, very similar to what Officer Tusing was doing when he was driving my car, and that, except that this went a slightly different way. And next week on the call, actually, you know, just text after you look at the video, text Michael or just email him on how many shots you think you heard while this guy perishes. Okay. Just count how many shots you think these five officers fired. And of the five officers, tell me how many you think actually fired their weapon at least once. And then tell me how many times you think they actually all fired total. Okay. Because what's happening is that, some people say, well, he's got a bad attitude. Well, there's some times when a bad attitude can be very, very dangerous, you know, and had there been other passengers in the car, they could end up just like this gentleman did. The bottom line is that technically those guys are there to protect and serve, and if you give them a measure of unconditional respect, no matter how good they're acting, no matter how much they do or don't deserve it, it's like fighting fire with water. As always says, a kind answer turns away wrath, gentle answer. Being pleasant to these citizens, especially when if they've already had a bad day, they woke up on the wrong side of the bed, they haven't had their coffee yet or whatever, and they've got a grouch tied on, and they're just looking for a person to put a name to their pain, then don't be that. be the type of person that so sweet, kills him with kindness, is so sweet and so pleasant and so respectful that they can't help but just all of a sudden melt, you know, and turn to goo in your hands, in front of you and treat you kindly, okay? Especially those of us who are American nationals. And if that, at this juncture, the way you treat them on the introduction, it'll get to the place where they may actually find out and determine your status and how to treat you. And at that juncture, that's the type of one that, I've had the honor and the privilege of seeing when they walk back up and they say, sir, you were going a little fast. You were going 21 miles over the limit, and that, your left taillight's not work. Actually, it was intermittent. He says, could you please see if you can get that fixed? And, also try to make sure you come to a complete stop when turning right. And it went from that. I went from potentially this guy, his partner was saying, well, look, you know, it's an unsafe vehicle. We should just have it towed. And, that particular stop was me. And, that was my personal stop. And his partner, my son, was sitting in the right front seat of this little, green Ford, minivan that we were driving at the time. And, this officer was very unkind to start with. He says, you know, you didn't stop all the way back at that stop back there. You know, is there something wrong with your brakes? Is this unsafe? And, you know, and your taillight's flickering and, you know, but all of a sudden he got to the place where he, says, sir, if you could, drive a little slower and, you know, et cetera, and make sure you come to a complete stop and see what you can do about getting that taillight fixed. He says, I'd appreciate it. You have a good day. It took him 12 minutes arguing on the phone to finally all of a sudden, but sir, and I could hear him say that, okay, sir, that's the way we'll treat it. And he comes back to me and hand me my insurance and, my, ID at the time. And, that was it. It's just, so, had I been a little bit resistive or unpleasant, that could have turned very, very bad. We currently have a couple of students that, the less than kind constabulary, or Leo, tripped their trigger and they got resistive and things could have gotten very, very bad. One of them, he got away easy compared to how resistive he got. He only got 3 felony grand jury indictments. That was all. And we're confident that we can get all of those overturned for this. And, it's in the process against an extremely resistive, district attorney, this district attorney has zero desire to cooperate. And, so we're having way, way too much fun. But had this student, been a little bit more kind and considerate on the stop, well, had he been a little more kind and considerate, I may never have had the honor and privilege of getting a chance to meet and know him. Because things might have gone, very, very well, for him, and, definitely wouldn't have had the grand jury, felony grand jury indictments, 3 of them. Very, very serious. And we've had the dubious honor and privilege of having other students that have had multiple felony grand jury indictments, and the best way to handle it, I believe, is out of court. But if we handle it properly before it comes to trial, you know, like that one person in New York that they only had a traffic issue. But they got a nice notice of dismissal saying in the interest of justice, we're dismissing your case. That's what this group of information providers, part of the ones that I deal with, that we these students, this is what we try to do. If you recently have your status in their computer corrected, please, please, please do not attempt to go out and test it by driving a 87 in a 75. Or no, it was 87 in a 78 is what he did. They're still working on that one. He was intentionally coloring outside the lines to see if he could test the status and situation, and they're being very, very, very grouchy with him. The problem was that he was in a different state, and it wasn't easy for him to appear personally, and so now they're compiling failure to appear and other things on top of his charges, and they're tabulating the high dollar nickels for fines. So with that, always have the kindest of consideration for your fellow person, whether it's a coworker or a spouse or family member or just a friend, and remember that same kind consideration that you're giving to them, please remember to give it to the Leos, those that are paid to protect and serve. Some people say, well, I've heard bad stories. I have too. And there are those out there that give Leos a bad name. Most of them are good. Most of them are people just like you and I, just trying to earn a living and feed the family and keep shoes on the children and pay for the children's tuition, and pay the mortgage on the house so the children have a place to sleep. There are the bad ones out there. Let's handle those with such dignity and respect that even their counterparts, and I'll tell you something, I had a watch commander dress down a sheriff deputy, not just in front of me, but in front of 41 other sheriff deputies, about how badly this deputy, it was a female deputy, had treated me, cracked five of my ribs. I was on the floor. I had double pneumonia. I was having trouble breathing, and I was having trouble living at the time. And he dressed her down in front of them, saying, look, this guy, he was honest, sincere, he's innocent. You know, don't do what she just did to him. And, you know, and I, he gave me a moment to speak, and I says, look, she's only 5'6" and a half, and in a room full of individuals that could overwhelm her and kill her in a heartbeat, she's just trying to show that she can handle herself. And she was a little scared. I pulled up my shirt and showed him the horrible bruises that I had from it, and I says, you know what? And because she's trying to do her job the best way she knows how, the only way she knows how, she thought that was acceptable, but now she knows better. So, and they asked me if I was going to press charges, and I says, no. Why should I? She knows better now, and she's trying to protect and serve. I won the favor of not just her, not just the watch commander, but those other 41 deputies that were looking on at the time, and this was at the local Harris County Jail here, and doing what's right, even when it's hard, and they've been very wrong, and you can be justified for that. I got stopped one time. The trailer taillight for the license and the license plate light were flickering. And he says, don't I know you? we've met before, and come to find out that it was at the jail. And he says, you're the guy. And I says, what do you mean? He says, she kicked your ribs in, you know, and you didn't press charges. You had respect for her. He says, well, I'm going to show you some respect. You know what? See if you can get that taillight fixed. And your license plate light is dangling. And you have a nice evening, sir. He didn't even get to the place where he asked me for my license and my insurance. When he got ready to pull me over, I was doing 17 miles over the limit also. You know, and he didn't even bring that up. But you never know who's watching and how you handle yourself on a traffic stop. With that, I'm 2 minutes over. My humble apologies. This is now the time we open up for question and answers. If you choose to stay on the topic, subject matter topic, wonderful. If you don't, you're free to open it up for whatever you want. I am going to beg your grace tonight. I would like to make it as early at night as possible. I spent the day down at the hospital with my wife and technically in an outpatient procedure. So as soon as I get done with you folks, I'm going to go spend some time with my other family, the one that I'm actually married to. So with that, back to you, Martin.
All right. Thank you. Good topic, Mike. Good call. Star 2 on your keypad, folks. If you have a question, star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. I will call on you one at a time and unmute you. If you're listening on the Freedoms Radio side, type your questions in the question bar at this time and click submit.
And it's definitely not going to hurt my wife's feelings if all of a sudden I came home early.
Yeah, star 2 to raise your hand, folks. Do you see any hands going up, Mr. Edward?
Yes, sir. There's 3 up right now.
Yes, I'm not reflecting that on mine. Could you see to that? I'm going to refresh mine.
Not a problem. While you're doing that, I want to – let's see. Where'd it go? They had enough. All right. So first on the call will be Mr. Anderson. Go ahead, sir. Eau Claire.
Hey, how are we all doing there? Appreciate your time and your effort. Are we still on for Thursday morning?
Yes, sir, we are.
Okay, I just resent you the gentleman's files. It wasn't much, but I just resent it, so everything is, for time's sake and brevity, it'll be readily available for you, and we'll look forward to then. We thank you, and we'll be praying for your wife.
Thank you. You're very kind. I appreciate your kindness and your graciousness.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Martin. Bye.
You're welcome. Next is Jennifer. Go right ahead.
Good evening, John, Michael, Martin. I just want to say thanks for all you do, John. And I'm not going to ask a question, so you can enjoy your wife. Good night.
Well, you're very gracious, young lady. With emphasis on young.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. And I've got, as I see it now, Mr. Edward, we're good here. All right. Let's go ahead and Kent, I see you there as well. You're unmuted.
Good evening. Hello, John. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, Kent. How you doing, my honored brother?
Okay. And I hope you're doing fine, considering what you just told us. And I hope your wife makes out okay. I want to thank you for taking the time tonight to explain the difference between the autograph and signature that we had requested. I appreciate that. And I appreciate the content of what else you had to say tonight about traffic stops. And I do have one question that's off that topic. A lot of people in this quote-unquote movement talk about the value of the 1828 Webster's Dictionary. Could you just comment very briefly on that and whether you think it's necessary to have the original dictionary or whether a facsimile would do if you were using that dictionary for definitions at the time documents were drawn?
He just dropped off the call. Am I good?
Oh, okay.
Hold on. Well, sometimes it happens. Hold on. Let me go back and get him. Give me a second here. He hasn't figured out yet that he's been hung up on. Well, he hung up on his. He dropped his call. Here he comes. Oh, boys. Hello, John.
Yes, sir.
All right, I've got you. I've got you on speakerphone, and we've got Kent here.
Try to dial back into the regular number?
Do the private number.
Do the private?
Yeah.
Okay.
You'll be right. Dialing back in a second.
Okay.
So, appreciated your comments that you out to me. Hold on a second.
Are you there?
Okay, we're all merged here. Yeah, I was just talking to Kent here for a second. Just wanted to publicly thank you, Kent, for sharing those comments regarding moving a little bit too quickly during the Q&A session. We're going to take care of that without a problem.
Okay.
Thank you. And I shared with John the balance of what you had shared with me as well.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Is John back?
Yes,
John is.
Oh, John, I don't know. Did you hear my question about the dictionary? I don't know where we lost you.
No, I did not hear the question. My humble apologies.
Okay. I was asking off topic, since a lot of people in this quote-unquote movement rely on or think we should rely on the 1828 Webster's for the definitions of words and what those definitions or the defining of those words were at the time a document was written. Do you generally agree with that? And if so, do you think there's any difference from using, let's say, the original Webster's versus a facsimile edition of the 1828 Webster's?
You know, you've got a very good point there. And, you know, that could I expand that to include Black's Law?
Sure, expand it as much as you like.
Yeah. For everyone that's listening, Kent has an unbelievably important and incredibly good point here. A lot of the words, you know, like, do you be blue, brother? You know, that blue doesn't mean near the same thing that it does today as it did 100 years ago or just 80 years ago. And so to that end, what happens is that when we're digging through some of the communication issues, a lot of the jurists, and I don't mean just the one on the bench, I mean the ones in the box, the jury box, and sometimes even the prosecutors don't understand the original intent and the original meaning. And if we can tactfully and diplomatically bring up that point, I had a case probably 22 or 23 years ago that we were dealing with a Virginia law regarding land and the taxation. And what happened was is that the assessor-collector could not get his teeth out of this. And when we pointed out that the definitions of four words as they were defined when the law was originally penned, and this law was penned in the 1800s, all of a sudden, and this was a she was so cut to the quick that she says, "Your Honor, there's no way I could have known this. We're going to withdraw the charges. We're going to both the assessor-collector and the ADA, the assistant district attorney, were both women, and I couldn't believe it. They literally almost, in three-part harmony, there's only two of them there, they sang the same song, 'Let's Dismiss, Your Honor.'" And so Kent's point is very, very valid. Recently, I just got a brand new copy of Black's Law, first edition. And it's a digital copy. I got it off eBay. And it was a whopping $9.97 delivered. And and I used to have a first edition Black's Law. I used to have a first edition of the first edition Black's Law before the fire. I also had a second, a third, and a fifth, all hard copies. And Kent's point, I kid you not, there are 33 years ago, I was involved in a case where, and it was a property rights case, et cetera, that was just unbelievable. And when I went back to Black's Law second edition, everything took on a whole new meaning. And the case that had been in court for over 2 weeks. And usually if a case like this runs more than two or three days, if it's not like a criminal felony jury trial or something like that, a property rights issue is just, you know, for 2 weeks, and it's a jury trial, by the way, all of a sudden, on the weekend, my wife and I, we went to San Antonio to visit, and in this little bookstore was an original second edition Black's Law, and I started paging through it, and tears came to my eyes as I was just paging through looking at it, and the lady at the counter says, "Sir, if you're going to cry in that, you're going to have to buy it." And I says, "Absolutely." I says, "How much is it?" She says, "It's $3,100. Holy broken tree feathers, Batman. I paid for it. I bought it. It was $3,100. It was a collector's edition. But less than 40 minutes of holding that up and reading it to the jury, the judge says, "I'm sorry, I'm going to rule on this one, and we're dismissing these people's case against you immediately." And it was that. I wasn't there an hour reading out of that after over 2 weeks, almost 3 weeks of trial. So going back to what was originally defined, very important, absolutely. And Merriam-Webster has, it's the same thing. Thank you. Very good point, Kent.
Okay. And lastly, would you find a facsimile, or what they term to be a facsimile edition, to be the equivalent of the original?
There are copies of the different editions, and when I said I had a first edition of the first edition, I had a first pressing of the first edition Black's Law, and it didn't say first edition. It just said Black's Law. That's how you knew it was the first edition, because it's the only one that didn't say which edition it was. Right now, this new electronic copy that I have has what they did was they scanned PDF'd it, and it's not all they have. Well, they do have it converted to digital also, but they have scanned copies of each of the pages. And it hurts my heart to think that they actually unbound this to scan it, but they did, you know. And so, yeah, for the most part, it's my perception that they are as valid and as good as the original.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate your comments. I appreciate all of your comments this evening. I thank you for what you do. And I think this suggestion is in order. Go home and take care of your wife. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Kent. The Most High King's blessings be upon you, minor brother. Take care.
Thanks.
Thank you, Kent. All right, star 2 on your keypad, folks, if you have a question. If not, we're going to let our speaker send his matters there. And, yeah, it looks like we're clear on that side. Let me get a...
Yeah, we're all good.
Sure,
so we'll see you tomorrow. Yeah, tomorrow night. Talk about tomorrow night real quick and he's already gone. Tomorrow night, Mr. Slevin will be joining us, and you're going to be hearing about a motion. It's critical that you learn about it, whether you're an employee or an entrepreneur. So until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.